come over from Hull. I feel I'm in the company of giants, so thank you both and Dale for such illuminating and disturbing evidence. I am originally a food scientist, been in and out of the food industry all my life, love it, it's given me my life, my career, my friends. I did a master's in health sciences, specialising in, strangely enough, behaviour. My dissertation at the time was how we shop when we're hungry. The answer is, well, it wasn't very just a bit of academic work, but I think we all know that old story, don't go shopping when you're hungry because you don't buy cream cakes. I don't know if I proved it. But then I was at the University of Hull and I worked in the medical school and then on a research project in functional foods and clinical trials. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do the food policy MSc from City University in Tin Lang. Something I've followed Tin Lang since his academic work since 1995, and I was very fortunate to be able to do. And that really has provided me with the knowledge and understanding to set up, after I left the university, to set up something called Food for Hull, or part of the Sustainable Food Cities Network. Although I live in the East Riding of Yorkshire, Food for Hull is all about the city of Hull. And just to plug, the city you may not know, but we have just about a year ago been awarded the City of Culture of 2017. Now, Hull may be a bit like Liverpool, Liverpool got it 20 years ago, and the M62, I think it's the food motorway, isn't it? The food lorries go backwards and forwards, nobody else does, but sort of two sides of the country that nobody really knows about. So, I was very great to come talk to that. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've seen in the local area as well as in Hull itself and the difficulties of dealing with people to try and persuade them to change their ways, as Dale has suggested. Changing behaviour is much, much more difficult than first seems. So my first question also was, can affordable food also be sustainable? And I think was a key question for the Commission. I have no evidence that it could be, but I would say yes, but only if we change how we behave, how we consume, and how the food system sets up. I actually don't think, that's the elephant in the room, no one will talk about it. We have to use it sustainable for the climate system, and I think Tim has put the data out there and continues to do so. So I've listened over the weekend to the previous hearings, and they are wonderful, they're all online. And there are lots of very, very good bits of evidence and lots of enormously valuable information. Food budgets are flexible, food costs percentage of revenue can vary, the less well-off pay a percent of substantial bigger proportion of income on food, and they have fixed costs, as we all know. I think time and place are critical, and that includes to shop, to cook, to consume, to dispose of, and that's exactly what Dale was saying. My eldest son is now in his mid-20s, lives in London, he eats out all the time. It's a little bizarre with someone who never ate out when I was younger, but then I'm just showing my age. I think it was very interesting, I picked up Martin Farrell has said something about local regulation may work much more effectively than central regulation, and I think that comes through when I talk about Hull City Council. And when we started to talk about local rules being made to super local people, and you ask the question, what is data for? And I was just reading on the train on the way over, the IIED was just this lovely discussion about a report about what is data for. And we mine all this data, and it's wonderful stuff, and we have the capacity, we have these wonderful tools to do better analyses. But actually, what is our local data for our local people? You know, how is it affecting our people on the ground? And I've met many people in streets in Hull who, you know, central government dictates, so really nothing to do with them at all. And it could be in other countries, often is, actually. So I think that's an interesting issue. And I think that there will be some more regulation as local authorities become more empowered, and I'd like to see that. The conversation again has got previous speakers, the drivers for behavioural changes need, and what are those drivers? They may be health, they may be price, I mean it's each individual's, but I think there are nudges, as we know about Knowledge Possibilities, published a book in 2008 about persuading people to move in slightly different directions. But we do need to identify some really successful drivers. Now, I'm shamelessly promoting Carl, because I think it is, and I will pass this round. It is quite a unique place because it's set on this wonderful estuary of Humber Bridge and the Humber estuaries there. Humber's a funny city, it's a unitary authority, it's tiny. It has a terrible reputation, and it's not its ruin, it's fault. It's anybody see that? The point. The Humber Bridge is there, so Humber's this little tiny bit here. This, the whole of this is that's its torture, surrounded by this vast rural network of land and frankly water. And this bit out east was the old sort of glacial plain, sort of holderness area of the east riding of Yorkshire, and has enormously rich and rich soil. I'll pass that one to you. But that was produced by bondholders of Hull, of course. They're very keen to promote business. We've got a lot of food processing industry, the biggest area of food processing in the country. We have huge logistics. We have this triple port. We've got Siemens about to sign up to come and build wind turbines. Hull's going to be the new green energy city of the UK. Well, let's hope so. I'm less easy about that. I went to the Oxford Real Fire Conference in early January. I'm afraid I shamelessly again captured this off the website. They just released all the photos and all the videos. I know that there's been a lot of press about only 100 harvests left in UK farm soils, and we're talking about environment and land and food production at the moment. Just in passing, this gentleman is Patrick Holder, Soil Association. He had a very good impromptu cost of counting half-hour session. If you ever get a chance to go to the Oxford Rural Farm Conference, I would recommend it. Great fun. But are there only 100 harvests left in our UK farm soils? I'm not farming. However, I've been lucky as a child to cross land in the south, here on the southern. I've crossed land on horses all my life, and I've seen the changes in farmland and the changes in farming practices. And I now don't have horses, but I cross land on my legs. And I happened to be in October last year in Burton Pidsey. Burton Pidsey is out in Holderness, that is out in the east, you saw. And this is a huge field. I was in this field, this whole mass here, the leaves up there. And these are wind turbines, which is, that's fine, there's a good wind farm there. And I stood under that one and watched it go round. I stood right underneath it and watched these massive, wonderful windmills go round. But my point was, I was really disturbed. I walked off the road and up across the fields at Stanwood wind turbine, and the soil was like a lunar landscape. There'd been a crop of beans, pulses, and the beans, and this is where it gets really interesting around global situation with this global world we're in. The beans have been grown under an international aid contract for either Africa or one of the stands, And they've been grown and harvested. Before they were harvested, they were sprayed off, foliage was sprayed off, because you can't export beans or pulses with this beetle, the aspirin beetle. It's actually one of the things that the safety issue this year. You can't do that. But I just happened to come across this field when it had been completely sprayed. It had been a windrow. It was pretty dry. And the soil had capped, and it was slightly ridged, which was quite a tiny bit. But it was like there was no insects, there were no birds, there were no animals of any kind, there were no bees, there were no butterflies. It was like a lunar landscape, and it was 20 acres, 30 acres, that patch, and it was absolutely terrifying. I don't know how many of you have ever read Silent Spring, 63 absolutely seminal text. was a poem about Anglo Birdsong, there was nothing around. And a dear friend of mine, who lives also his father's father, who's a brother farms, he said that land used to be a farm, that village used to have 6-7 farms, there used to be 2 dairy farmers down that road. And that field probably had 6-7 different fields edged by edges. Now, I'm not saying that that's how it was 1,000 years ago, because it wasn't. But I was really disturbed enough to write to a friend of mine to ask him what had happened on a certain farm. And there was very little life. That really worried me. I think what we're doing, this was really, it had obviously been a valuable crop, it had been part of the international aid effort, it had been exported to people who needed it. But this, it was really disturbing. So I wanted just to say, this same field, this was the same field before in Sprague, you can see the kind of, this wonderful, the Holmes has this wonderful open landscape. However, going back to more cheerful times, there was a Stockbridge Technology Centre at Selby in Yorkshire. This is the future of growing under LED lights. For those of you who follow this sort of thing, they have just harvested their first crop of tomatoes. Now, this is a MAF farm, a research farm in 1946, was set up about 250 acres. It's now does commercial and all sorts of research. The technology developed there, and this is the crop of tomatoes growing under LED lights. Technology developed there was part of the Planet Earth complex. I don't know if any of you know about Planet Earth. It's the privately owned with the Netherlands. I think some of them are Dutch, half owned in the UK. It produces it's a glasshouse complex out in Essex. It produces 7% of our cider crops, and the heat and the light. To produce tomatoes in February at this latitude in the UK, I mean, it begs the question, what are we doing? And do we really need tomatoes? They did the same with cucumbers. I wrote a big essay about it for one of my food policy assignments. We really, what's a cucumber give to you? Because actually, it's 99% water, and it usually goes in the bin. So what are we doing? We're going to time anyway. However, you want to know about what? We're going to hear about how we're going to know.
Quite quickly.
Yes, right. It comes at the bottom of all the indices. Sadly, it hasn't been a great city in terms of how you measure it, but it's coming back up. It is the 10th most deprived local authority, and because of that, as you know, deprivation is known to lead to, can promote obesity because of all the reasons and so what do we do about it? And be encouraged by being part of the Sustainable Food City, by networking in the city, by talking to Hull City Council, who of course are thrilled because we're free and funding is a real issue, especially sustainable funding. We've got groundwork in Hull, we've got Hull Local Plan, which I commented on, and with lots of consideration for food growing. We've got Fair Share, which deals with the waste food, but we're going to put that in the food pantry model. We've got 2 city farms planned. There's a great interest in aquaponics and aquaculture. Local food networks, there are Hull food assemblies, the Run Junk Food Project. All these things are happening in Hull. And my big point, which I wanted, especially with Jeanette here, is Hull City Council at the time produced free to all primary school children school meals in 2004. It was a very interesting project. It was actually pre-Jamie Oliver, but it was a very interesting project and a very successful one. But the colour of the council changed and they closed the funding. And actually, I think if we're going to have change, if we're going to have behavioural change, it should come through schools. It's taken 40, 50 years to get to where we are now. It's going to take 40, 50 years to get through this. And it's going to come through the younger generation. It's going to come through this change that's happening everywhere. It's going to come through schools. And that's where I personally think we need to change. And also, the council actually very open to it, so good for them. And finishing on that, that's a picture of Hull. And I feel we're all connected. We may sit out on the east side of Yorkshire and please come see how those who haven't been, I'm sure there are many that have. But it's a great place, but we are affected, as I said, by everything that was done in our main food city. And I'm on a very interesting D group called Food for Cities. And there's lots of discussion at the moment about feeding cities, urban food, and historically whether the outside, the countryside used to feed the cities. And I think there's a lot of discussion to have about whether you can feed people in cities properly with vertical farming and city farms. So I'd be very happy to take questions on that.